Welcome to Sensible Health Solutions, the show where we simplify health and wellness. Join your hosts, Haley Fields and Dr. Scott Looper, as they share practical tips and expert insight to help you navigate common ailments, nutrition, and overall well-being. Tune in for straightforward advice that empowers you to live a healthier life.
Good morning, Dr. Looper.
Hello, Haley.
How's it going?
Good. It's going good.
Good. Well, coming up here at the end of the month, you have a talk with the university. Every year you do a lecture for them, a part of their...
Healthy Living Series.
Healthy Living Series. So where is this again? This is in the engineering building?
Yeah, they have a lecture hall in the engineering building, third floor. I can't remember exactly what the number on the thing is. It's a nice room.
The Usabelli Engineering Building.
Yeah,
it's all set up for public lectures.
So there's docs from all around the community coming together and talking about some of their favorite things to talk about. And I've been fortunate enough to be asked to come back basically every year and do a talk. I'm really excited about this year's talk because, honestly, it's what I do the most.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I'm a general practice doctor. I treat everything that comes in the door. But the thing that I do over and over and over and over again is work on people's guts to get their other problem to get better.
Yes.
You know, the gut problems, you can understand if you had a gut problem and you'd be working on someone's guts to get their gut problem better. That sounds reason. That's logic. But their anxiety?
Yeah.
Or their lupus?
Mm-hmm.
Or their headaches?
Mm-hmm.
Or their psoriasis? I mean, what does that have to do with guts? Turns out, a lot.
Yeah.
And each one of those.
Usually patients come in here not knowing that it's their guts that need to be fixed,
yeah.
But they come in with all of these other downstream symptoms. So.
Yeah. So the name of the talk is Gut Feelings and How to Take Care of Your Microbiome or something
cute.
Like that. Yeah. And the gut feeling thing is related to the fact that the literature of medicine and studying microbiome is blowing up right now. There is a ton of energy going into this, and it's been very fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots of things are being discovered about the connection between our gut bacteria and our mood.
Big time.
Yeah, and a lot of this research is actually being done here in Fairbanks.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah, there's a Dr. Bolt, Abel Bolt Ito. I may be murdering his name. I'm sorry. Names don't stick with me very well. But anyways, lovely, lovely fellow is doing research on mice as a way to do drug research.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's hard to do drug research on people because people are complicated and they take a lot of money. Whereas mice are cheap and you put them in a little cage and, you know.
And it takes a lot of medication for people, whereas mice probably not as much.
True enough. Mm-hmm. Smaller doses, mm-hmm. right? Anyways, the tricky thing is treating mood problems in mice is figuring out what their mood is. You know, you can't do psychoanalysis on mice, you know.
But you can tell by behaviors. You know, are they nesting? Are they intermingling? Are they isolating? Are they showing aggressive behavior?
Yeah, one of the things they figured out is if they're anxious, then mice tend to build bigger nests because they want more space around them. And so you could measure mice anxiety by taking their nest and putting it on a scale.
Right.
And just measuring how much it weighs. And there it goes. You've got anxious mice, they make bigger nests. If you got happy mice, well-adjusted mice, they make smaller nests. And then you could take the anxious mice and then, you know, do various things with them and figure out how to help them. One of the things we've discovered, and this has been known for a long time, is if your serotonin levels go up, you feel better about stuff. You're
right.
Not so worried.
Right.
You're like, whatever, it's all good.
And interestingly enough, 70% of your serotonin is produced in your gut.
Yeah, except you got the number wrong. It's closer to 90%.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, in theory, the canon is that serotonin is not available to your brain. It's prevented from getting in your brain by your blood-brain barrier. And certainly, to some extent, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
The blood-brain barrier does block serotonin. Now, the fact is, some leaks. And there is, in fact, leakage going on. That blood-brain barrier, it's not perfect. It's not 100% perfect. There's breaks in it. They just occur. You know, it's like anything else. It doesn't work 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And the degree to which there are breaks there, and those are mostly generated by inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
If the inflammation's high, there's lots of leakage. If the inflammation is low, the leakage is less. So there is an actual connection between gut serotonin and your mood. If the gut serotonin is up, and your brain's working well, and everything kind of clicks. And if it's not, then there's a connection between those things, and you actually you get more anxiety is what you get. So it turns out the one of the more effective ways to actually improve someone's health and their mood, but their health primarily, is to get their guts working better. Mm-hmm. And so if we can get the right kinds of bacteria in the right proportions in your digestive system, then things tend to run better. And that's where a lot of the research is going on right now. Now, back in the day when I was, you know, a medical student, the only thing we ever talked about was lactobacillus and bifidobacteria, as if those were the two bacteria that were in our gut. And it turns out that they're players for sure, but they're not the key players.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of other stuff that's actually more important.
One of the most interesting facts that I love about the gut microbiome is that there are more cells in your gut bacteria than there are cells that make you human, yeah. Which is more cells than tissues, more cells than bones, more yep. cells than ligaments.
Yep. There's a
amazing.
Lot of them.
Amazing.
You know, we should not call them them because they're part of us. Now, they're not us. They're genetically, they're disparate. But we are, in fact, a community.
Yeah.
We are, in fact, a community. And for us to be healthy, we need our community to be intact. And it's not as easy as you think. Now, it runs by itself, so you think it is real easy. But in today's modern world,
no.
It doesn't run
easy. They make it really hard for us.
So we, as a species, particularly in the first world countries, are losing our gut bacteria. The depth and breadth of types of bacteria that we have is less than it used to be. So if you actually just check and you just count all the different types of bacteria, there tends to run about 1,000 of them, but there's less now than there used to be.
Okay.
And people don't exactly understand why. Why is there less? But I know why. I'll just tell you right now. Well, it's without a doubt. It's because the amount of fiber mm-hmm. and the types of fiber we eat mm-hmm. are less. Because, yeah, I've been going on a rant here.
Go off.
Our gut bacteria live on leftovers.
Uh-huh.
Because if they don't have food, they don't have theirs. They have nothing to live on.
Uh-huh.
They live on leftovers. So whatever we don't digest, that's what they get to eat. Now, if you digest food very poorly because your digestive system is weak, for whatever reason, because you're stressed maybe, or you're old maybe, or whatever. This could be any number of reasons. So your digestive system is weak. It's not literally digesting all your food. You're sending undigested food down. There are bacteria that can take advantage of that undigested food, and they do us no favors.
Mm-mm.
So if you send protein down, what you're basically doing is you're rotting. That's the word we use, rotting.
Mm-hmm.
That's digesting and making nasty bits.
Yes.
Okay. That's generating in our gut. So we're rotting the leftovers. And turns out we don't do very well when there's a lot of rotten material in us. We feel poorly.
Uh-huh.
Our skin is bad. Mm-hmm. We feel tired. We tend to have headaches.
We have brain fog.
Whatever. A bunch of stuff happens.
Energy.
Our liver goes cattywampus or hormone regulation. I mean, this is the reason why I'm treating all
these. We get anxiety.
Right. We're treating all these other conditions by improving digestion. And the main thing with the digestion is not that I'm giving people better probiotics.
Mm-mm.
That's not the solution.
No.
The better thing to do is to improve digestion. So
right?
that when you digest your food, you literally digest everything that you can.
Mm-hmm.
Because the stuff that you can digest, if that gets out in the lower intestine, that makes nasty crap. Literally.
Yes.
Okay. We don't like nasty crap, but if you can suck all the protein in and all the fats in and all the carbohydrates in, you break them down and you absorb them and they go into our circulation and they build our body up. And the only thing we're sending down is what we literally can't digest
because
mm-hmm. we don't have the enzymes for it. And that's fiber.
Yes.
Now, fiber is not one thing. Fiber is 1,000 things. Think of all the different kinds of things that you could eat and that you can't digest completely. Broccoli, it's got fiber.
Mm-hmm.
Carrots, it's got fiber. Apples, it's got fiber. I mean, they're all a little different. They're not the same exact kinds of fiber.
Right.
There's different flavors of fiber, different mechanisms to break into these different kinds of fiber to be able to access the calories that are contained in that fiber. And when the beneficial bacteria ferment the fiber, they release short-chain fatty acids. And again, this is an oversimplification. There's a lot more detail here.
More detail in the talk.
If I get into the details, we just killed the talk.
Right, right.
Now it's Dr. Looper going on with a lot of big words. That is not what the mission is, not for me to string big words together. What I'm trying to do is tell a story that you can take home and think about and then make your life better with. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's the take-home message on this one. Okay, you think it's eat fiber. Yes, it is. It is. But the better message is eat a variety of fiber.
And also eat digestible foods. Foods that are able to rot in your gut adequately.
Yeah. If you're eating food that's designed not to rot, you're pushing uphill.
If that's like the majority of your diet.
Yeah, and food that's designed not to rot is the food that they sell at the grocery store.
The shelf stable, yeah, the preserve, the package, food, yeah, the cakes, the pastas, the breads, cured meats.
They got to put stuff in these foods to keep them from rotting.
Mm-hmm, the preservatives.
And rotting is digestion.
Yes.
And so you keep them from rotting, you weaken our ability to digest them.
So if you leave it on your counter for a few days and it starts to go bad,
that's the food you want to eat.
That's what you want to be consuming. Okay.
Not the rotten stuff.
I have a side tangent question. I'm reading this book by Dr. Josh Axe called Ancient Remedies. Uh-huh. And in the introduction, he talks about antibiotic resistance and how it is probably the scariest thing that our future generations are looking at in regards to medicines, in regards to digestion.
Yeah, because if we can't treat infections, then we're going to die of infections, like they did in the old days.
Basically, we've just been given so many antibiotics, our bodies have become resistant to it. They can overcome these antibiotics. Well, what he found in several studies was that the more antibiotics a person would take years prior, the more susceptible they were to cancer. Now, my question is the more antibiotics one takes leading a trickle-down effect of this reduced amount of bacteria in our gut?
Yes. Okay. Now, it's not like one thing is causing this.
Right.
There's probably 50 things.
Yeah. Along with our food and along with our activity levels.
Yeah. So the gut bacteria is part of this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the effects of having bad bacteria is you get an increased risk for cancer. The number one cancer you have increased risk for is colon cancer.
Yeah. And they are now coming out with lots of research to scare us that our generation, my generation and younger, are about 60% more susceptible to colon and intestinal cancers.
Yes, unless you got a healthy microbiome.
Right.
And then you don't. There
right.
is no increase. So it's not like it's a generational thing. It just happens to be a lifestyle thing.
Right.
There is more and more people eating more and more, you know, packaged food because it's convenient,
fast
it's
food.
Cheap, it's easy, it's tasty. My 10-year-old would live on packaged food if he could because
uh-huh.
he just loves it. It's designed to appeal to our basic instincts. It
the
really is.
Salts and fats.
Yep.
And
yep. Sugar, salt, and fat.
Sugar,
salt, and fat. You put those three things together, and that is what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the caveman days, those were in short supply, and those were always markers of high quality.
Yes.
If you had a food that was high in sugar, salt, or fat,
you were going to survive.
Fat, you found something that was fabulous, and your brain would reward you and say, more of that.
Mm-hmm.
That whatever you got, those rabbits, those are good.
Those
go get more of those,
yeah.
right? Or those apricots, those are fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
You got to remember where that apricot tree is because that we want more of those.
Yes, this is where we camp.
Yeah, and you get rewarded,
uh-huh.
and your brain says you did a good job. Well done, right? Well, now when Patrick goes looking for my lovely son, goes looking for something good, he gets rewarded because he found Skittles. And the Skittles don't have any fiber. There's
right.
no fiber whatsoever. So he's getting fake signals. Now, in nature, what that would have been associated with is a berry.
Mm-hmm.
And that berry would have come with fiber. It
yep.
would have come with carbohydrates, for sure. It also would have come with anthocyanins and a bunch of other stuff that are anti-inflammatory. And what that would do is lower our risk of colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And the Skittles are increasing our risk of colon cancer. And I have nothing against Skittles. Skittles are lovely. They're tasty and delicious. I'm a fan of Skittles.
Uh-huh.
You know, like seven at a time.
Right, but you can't survive off of Skittles.
No, and Patrick would.
Yeah.
He would. I mean, I'm honestly, given this choice, he would just eat them all the time. Now, maybe if we just gave him all the Skittles he could ever eat, he'd eventually burn out on them. I'm not so sure that's the case.
I don't know about
and
that.
And that ain't going to happen. I'm going to tell you right now. Skittles are limited. There are literally no Skittles in my house right now.
Yeah.
Right? Because we can't have them in the house because Patrick just eats
them. I can't have ice cream in the house.
Yeah, they're like that.
We can't have ice cream.
So what I do with patients is I give them simple things to do. Not easy necessarily. Simple is not easy always, but simple is easier than complicated. And so what I have them do is I give them a target. I say, I want you to eat 30 different kinds of fruit or vegetable in a week.
That doesn't seem easy.
No, it's not. It's easier than you think. It's not that hard.
So,
it's not like you eat 30 a day. Now,
no,
that would be rough.
Sure.
Right? But what you end up having to do is you get some apples and some oranges and some carrots and some broccoli, and then you use those onions to make that stir fry thing. And you threw some pea pods in that as well, right?
So here's a hot tip. Costco has these freeze bags of sheet vegetables, big bag. With squash, with asparagus, with mushrooms, with red onions, with sweet potatoes, with Brussels sprouts. They're great.
I know.
About $15 a bag.
We buy 2 bags a week.
I buy 2 bags every time I go shopping. One of one variety, one of the other variety, and switch out every
other
night.
Yeah, Christy lives on those. That's her number one source of calories is those sheet vegetables. Now, we've got the other brands as well. They're a little less expensive. You can get them for $10 a bag as opposed to $15. They're not as good. The sheet vegetable ones are just better. And we did the other stuff. And she said, forget it. We're just going to spend the money and get the sheet vegetable ones.
Yep.
Right. That's a great way to do it. And now you're getting
you have a
seven or eight different kinds in one bag
that aren't going to sit in your fridge and go bad sooner than these frozen vegetables would.
Yeah. And the frozen vegetables are excellent. They're typically picked at the peak of ripeness. They're trying to make the vegetables as good as they can get. If you're going to get peak of ripeness and you're going to pick them and put them in a box, by the time they get to the store, they're already run, right? They're already passed.
By the time they come to Alaska.
Yeah. So what they need is they pick them green and then they ripen. I'm using this air quotes because they only ripen, right? They ripen as they come and then we eat them kind of funky. I love Fairbanks. Fairbanks is a fabulous place to live. This is one of the downsides of the Fairbanks. We're at the end of the food chain, the transport chain.
The end
chain.
Of the road.
Yeah, yeah. And so we don't necessarily get the best produce. Now, having said that, you can get good produce. There are local farmers that are growing fabulous produce. The best carrots I've ever had in my entire life grow right here in Fairbanks because of the 24-hour sunlight.
Yes.
And the carrots never have to burn sugar to get through the night.
My
they
daughter,
just make sugar.
When she was about 3 and 4, the only carrots she would eat were the carrots out of Beamy's garden.
Yeah, they're better.
And now she won't eat store-bought carrots.
And store-bought carrots are still decent, but you got to lower your standards.
Yeah, no. Not with this girl. She cannot with carrots.
So it's a doable thing. It's not that hard. It's a challenge. And I've had people that is what we did to fix them. I had a little girl that was having stomach problems that were horrible. And I ran the test, and it turns out she had dysbiosis, and she had bad bacteria in her. And there you think there's all kinds of herbs and things that I would do. And I did. But in the end, I pulled all the herbs out. We didn't do any probiotics whatsoever. What we did was simply expand her diet and just have her on a regular basis eat a wide variety of fruits and vegetables, and it cured her 100%.
Good.
I mean, that's one example, but there's countless examples.
There are, you know, more complications with more cases.
Yeah. So let's talk about this thing. The big picture is, your gut microbiome is important for your health.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you fix it? No, you don't take probiotics. That is not how to fix it. Yeah, will it help? Yeah, a little. Not that much, though. Because the thing is, if you're trying to grow a garden and you take seeds and you fling them out on a hard, baked soil, right, that's dry and won't grow anything, you're just wasting your time.
Right.
The seeds are going nowhere.
You got a nutrient.
No, you got to.
The soil.
Yeah, you got to build the environment.
Uh-huh.
That is going to be conducive to growing these bacteria. Now, what do the bacteria need? Food.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're going to need someplace that's warm and wet. Well, you're already warm and wet already. Inside your guts are warm and wet. Check. We're done on that one. We don't have to worry about that. Now, what else do they need? They need something to eat.
Good. Something good to eat.
Just any kind of food whatsoever. And it turns out the bad bacteria like to rot all the leftover stuff. That's why they're bad bacteria, because they make nasty crap.
Mm-hmm.
So those are bad. Those will make you sick. So we don't want to have nasty crap. So what we need to do is get the good bacteria. Now, why are they good bacteria? Because they make short-chain fatty acids. They make stuff that helps us, stuff that our body likes, stuff that our body can burn for calories. So back in the caveman days, we ate lots and lots of fiber, because that was just all you could get, right? You're just eating nuts and berries and grubs, right? And so they were just all full of fiber. And we would take that fiber that we couldn't digest, have our gut bacteria digest it for us. We didn't know why, but they just did it on their own, right? And it would generate calories. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of times those calories that would be generated by the fiber would be the difference between life and death. Mm-hmm. Because about 20% of the calories that a person eating on, a caveman diet gets is from the fermentation of the soluble fiber. So a lot of times these fruits and vegetables, they have some calories in them, but they just have a lot of fiber. I mean, celery is a classic example. Celery doesn't have much in the way of calories in it. It's got a lot of fiber.
Yeah, you burn more calories eating celery.
No, you don't.
Oh, that's a myth?
That's a myth.
Ah!
You do not burn more calories eating celery than you get from celery.
Myth
because, buster. Because, here's the reason. The fiber goes into the system, feeds the beneficial bacteria. The bacteria break it down and they release short-chain fatty acids. So the calories you're getting from celery isn't from eating the celery. It's from fermenting the celery. Now, we're not unique on the planet Earth for doing this. In fact, we don't even do a very good job of it.
Mm.
Moose
yeah.
do a way better job.
Cows do a way better job.
Cows do a way better job. Mm-hmm. Ruminants, these animals that have all these multiple stomachs,
mm-hmm.
they extract way more calories out of their food. You think about a moose, they're huge. They're 2,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
They're as high as the top of my head at their shoulder. I mean, these are big animals. They're living at 40 below outside every day.
Yes.
Day and night.
Yeah.
How do they generate enough?
Burning a lot of calories.
Yeah, how do they generate enough calories to stay alive? Oh, I know how they do it. They eat twigs.
Bark. They eat bark.
Of all things in the world. They eat the little ends of the branches.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I couldn't live on those ends of branches. I'll tell you right now, I could eat them all day long and I would die.
Yeah.
I can't handle it, but they can. They're experts at this fermentation thing. What they are is homes for bacteria. Their bacteria keep them alive. What they do is they live on the product of fermentation. So if you take a moose and their gut bacteria change with the season, in the wintertime, they're used to eating twigs. In the summertime, they're used to eating green plants. So if you take a regular moose whose gut has changed to living on twigs and you feed them green plants, they'll die. They'll starve. Their gut bacteria can't handle it. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, they have to eat the right diet for the right time of year.
Mm.
Otherwise, they don't survive.
Okay.
That's how finely tuned the system is. So we are kind of like moose. We're not exactly like moose because we eat a wider variety of foods.
And we're not living outside at 40 below.
And we're not living outside at 40 below.
So our bodies well. Haven't really been designed to take those extreme climates and to preserve what we're eating in a way that sustains us longer.
Yeah, we can't live outside like moose do. I admit that. But we are not as far away from moose as you think because we also require fiber.
Yes.
To stay healthy.
Yes.
If we don't have that fiber, our guts go bad, our hormones go cattywampus, our inflammatory processes get out of regulation. We tend to die of heart attacks and strokes. We get moods. We feel horrible. We wonder what the purpose of life is because we feel bad. And in the mice make bigger nests because they're all anxious.
Mm-hmm. So I had dinner with a friend the other night who shared they don't eat vegetables. And I'm like, where do you get your fiber? And they said fruit.
Yeah, there's
is that fiber. Adequate amount of fiber?
Here's the thing about people. People have an amazing ability to live on a wide variety of stuff. There are people who live on meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, carnivore.
They have a carnivore diet. Now, most of the time, those people do not live on meat for very long.
Okay.
I know those people. And then for a while, I feel great. I feel great. I feel great. And then how do you do it? I went off that diet. I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Usually, how long does that take? About
3 months.
Okay.
A year is about the longest I ever see anybody stay on a carnivore diet. Now, the Eskimos, the natives, the Inuits, Eskimos is probably the wrong word to use. The natives, that's all they had to eat. And so their bodies adjusted to living on meat. But come summertime, they could get other stuff.
Right.
They would eat up whatever they could get is what they did. And, once you go through a few generations, you kind of get settled into a diet and our bodies adapt and are able to do just about everything we need. So there was, you could actually pull this thing off, but it's not necessarily easy and particularly not in our time, not in the way we live. Now, the quality of meat that we have access to, You're not going to go to the grocery store and get high quality meat. I'm sorry to say.
No.
It's hard. Yeah. You can do it. But you're going to have to search around to get...
And you're going to have to pay.
And you're going to have to pay. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that the best quality diet you can get for the general population is going to be a diet that has adequate amounts of protein in it, because we need protein. We just definitely need protein. You can be a vegetarian, but you got to find a good vegetarian sources of protein. You know, beans and nuts and stuff like that. And you're going to need to get fiber in the form of fruits and vegetables. Now, can you just eat vegetables and never eat fruits? Yes. Can you live well that way? It's hard, but you can do it. There's some things that are hard to get. Vitamin C is not as high. But anyways, there's ways to work around it. The anthocyanins to be a problem as well. But again, but there's ways to work mm-hmm. around that. And you could live on fruits and not vegetables. Same story. There's some problems with that. You're going to tend to be running on thinner ice.
Yeah.
But you want to make sure you got ample amounts of everything. Then it's better to have this wide variety diet. I mean, honestly, human beings are better as omnivores. It's just easier. For me, I'm not trying to pitch some kind of religion in terms of diet. Mm. I'm just trying to figure out how to maneuver
and
people in such a way to
best
be healthy
with people's bodies.
The experience I'm trying to shoot for myself personally is for folks to come back in. I say, "How you doing?" They say, "I feel great. I feel great." How do we do that? And you know, I could tell them all this complicated stuff, but then I just buried them. Forget it. I don't want to do that. I want to make it simple.
Yeah.
So I tell them, I want you to eat 30 different kinds of fruits and vegetables in a week.
Okay.
And now you're going to have to start thinking about, what can I eat? I'm going to have to try new stuff. And it's going to, you know, it's going to be a lifestyle change, but it's not particularly hard. And you just got to keep track. So the best way to keep track is either you got a little notebook, or you keep it on your phone, or you take one of those little sticky notes with a magnet on the back, put it on your refrigerator, and every time you eat a vegetable, you put a line on it.
You check it. Yep.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You do a slash across it. Uh-huh. That way you can tell whether you get to 30 or not. And at the end of the week, you go, woo, I got there, right? Or you come up short. You think, how can I fix this thing? And you run that for 3 weeks, and then you got a habit. Now you just kind of buy vegetables. And you're learning to do this thing. You learn how to get the sheet pan vegetable bag from Costco, right?
Yeah.
And now suddenly you're getting all kinds of stuff you weren't getting before, and you're feeling better for it. And you come back, how do you feel? I feel great, Dr. Looper. I really do. My energy's better. I'm sleeping better. My weight's coming down. My headaches are gone or better, whatever the case
my
is.
My mood is
better.
Yeah,
all the way along the line, right? Mm-hmm. The reason why this whole thing about dysbiosis is blowing up and our microbiome, in terms of the research, is because it's helpful.
Yes.
It just really does work. Mm-hmm. It actually's got stuff to it. So I realize we're at the end of the show. I want to be clear about this because the folks in Fairbanks can come to this talk.
Yes.
It's Tuesday night.
July 28th.
July 28th.
7 p.m.?
Yeah, 7 p.m.
Up at the Usabelli.
Third floor.
Engineering building.
Yeah, the third floor of the Usabelli, the engineering building at university.
Yes.
I can't tell you exactly what the room number is, but it's not hard to find. You can Google it.
You'll find people.
Yeah, and if you do go to the third floor, mill around, eventually you can see where people are going.
Yeah.
I like doing these talks. It's fun. It's always been fun. And it's always been very well received. Every year, it's
we
a
get
hoot.
So many patients from these docs.
Yeah, and more than that, a lot of people can't necessarily come and see me for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to get out the word about how to be healthy
right.
to a larger group. Like we do the radio show, same thing. I mean, a lot of folks just can't come in for whatever reason. They don't live here.
They don't live here. Their insurance isn't compatible.
Whatever. The reasons, right? And so those folks need help too. So this is one of the ways we serve those folks. Now, you don't get the full meal deal on the radio or in an hour-long talk.
Or really customized treatment.
Yeah, and you can't run the labs, and there's a bunch of other stuff that we need to do. But it's better than nothing.
Mm-hmm. It's a good starting point.
And sometimes it's a good enough to do it. I've had people come up to me later and say, Dr. Looper, I did what you said on the radio, and now my headaches are gone, right? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
It happens with fair regularity. And I always feel good about what we do. So this is one of those things.
Yeah. Good.
Free.
Free
is a very good price.
So those listening and those interested, again, Tuesday, July 28th, 7 p.m. in the Usabelli Engineering Building on UAF campus, third floor.
Yeah, and one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to actually go into the different kinds of bacteria and what they do and why they're important. Basically, helping manage the other bacteria, make them behave.
Yes, keep them in line. Wonderful,
cool.
Dr. Looper.
All right, Haley, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Sensible Health Solutions. We hope you found today's discussion enlightening and packed with practical tips to enhance your wellness journey. Remember, small changes can lead to big results. If you enjoyed the episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us bring you the best content possible. Stay connected with us on social media for more health insights and updates. You can find us at Sensible Health Solutions across all social platforms. Until next time, stay sensible and stay healthy. This content is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Seek medical advice from a healthcare professional for any medical conditions.